friends, family. Aunt Gretchen was a special person. She...
What's the point? I can't do this.
Of course you can.
Honey, you were doing just fine.
Well, that's because you were here. Tomorrow I'll be out there all alone, staring at my relatives, who'll be ready to hoot and snicker at the first crack in my voice. They'll think I'm an idiot.
Please, it's family. They know you're an idiot.
I just wanted to let you know about my study group.
Oh, don't be a fuddy-duddy. I'll be your study buddy.
I'm about to embark on one of the great challenges of my scientific career.
This work right here is going to change history.
I think this is going to be our greatest mission.
I don't have time to study. I'll never get into Stanford.
I got big plans for you tonight. I got maps. I got charts. I got to see you through this because my credibility is on the line.
It's at this point that you'll want to start taking notes.
Welcome to the Sitcom Study, the podcast where we contemplate the TV shows we grew up with and search for the truth and wisdom within the tropes and cliches. And to paraphrase Mr. Ross Geller, we are on a break.
We are on a break. That is correct. And we are bringing to you a mixtape of sorts.
Yes, this is basically inspired by... This is a very simple premise. There's no reason for me to explain it like this. But this is inspired by these YouTube videos I like to watch where somebody takes all of the Siskel and Ebert reviews over the years of a certain filmmaker and arranges them so you get to see all the Siskel and Ebert reviews of the John Carpenter movies, you know, all strung together. And so while we're taking a hiatus for a few weeks from making new shows, we thought it would be fun to pick some of the shows that we've covered a handful of times and make, like you said, a mixtape, just, you know, repurpose all of the segments for those shows and see what it's like to kind of string them all together. And that's what we're doing.
So up first, we've got the Golden Girls. We are going to re-listen to our Backdoor Pilots episode, the Golden Girls portion. Season 2, episode 26, Empty Nests. Then from our Cold War episode, we have season 3, episode 6 of Golden Girls, Letter to Mr. Gorbachev. And finally, from our Fear of Public Speaking episode, season 3, episode 5, Nothing to Fear But Fear Itself.
Yep, we've covered the Golden Girls 3 times, so you'll get to hear those 3 segments from those different shows. But before we get to that, let's play a Golden Girls quiz.
I would like to know, Jay, which Golden Girl do you think you are?
I think there's no question about it. I'm Blanche, not Blanche. I'm
Blanche. You're Dorothy.
Yes, I'm very much Dorothy. Yes. I'm grumpy. I'm tall. I've got a big nose. All of those things. Yeah. There's no question about it. Maybe a little Sophia, but I definitely don't really connect with Rose or Blanche much at all.
At all. Well, and so that's funny because I think I'm a combination of Blanche and Sophia.
Yeah, I think you've got a little bit of all of them. I mean, you're a little Southern, you're a little sexual, you know, you've got a little bit of the Blanche thing going on.
Yeah, well, and look, before I met you and before I was kind of settled down,
sure.
My friends from back home would definitely be like, oh, Amy's a Blanche.
You Blanched it up a little.
You know, as I've gotten on in years and kind of gotten settled in my ways, I think I'm a little more sassy in the way that Sophia is.
So question number 1, what quality do you look for in a mate? Adventurous, well-read, a pulse, or half your age?
Obviously, it's well-read.
Really? Not adventurous?
Yeah.
So I'll say, yeah, I would say well-read also. Okay, what's your favorite sinful dessert? We have cheesecake, Brandy Alexander, death by chocolate, or cannoli.
Okay, you answer first this time. What is your favorite dessert?
Cheesecake, definitely.
Cannoli for me. What is your favorite social media site?
God.
Tinder, Pinterest, Facebook, or Twitter?
All right. So we're really seeing when this thing came out, right? Because there's no Instagram or anything on here. I guess by default, Facebook, you know, I've never had a Twitter or Tinder account. And I've used Pinterest in a utilitarian way. So I guess I have to say Facebook, even though that's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, I know. Same. I actively dislike Pinterest, and I've not been on Twitter in years, and nor Tinder in years. So I guess I have to also say Facebook.
Okay, so let's pause the quiz for now, right? We'll continue answering questions and kind of honing in on our Golden Girls personalities throughout this whole process. Let's go now to our first segment, which is from our Backdoor Pilots podcast episode. This was the one where we covered Happy Days with the first appearance of Laverne and Shirley, and then the first proper episode of Laverne and Shirley. So this is the one where we talked about the Golden Girls vis-a-vis the Backdoor Pilot for Empty Nests. We had a lot to say about it, so here it is.
Thank you for being a friend.
Okay, so moving on to the Golden Gals.
The Golden Girls and the episode season finale for season 2, episode 26, titled Empty Nests.
I would be furious if I were a Golden Girls fan watching this in real time.
Oh my gosh.
And this was the last episode of the season.
Knowing I'm going to go away for the summer and not have any. This is May 16th, 1987. I'm not going to get another new Golden Girls until September.
Right. So the reason, I guess, aside from the machinations of, like we were talking about, the sort of cynical, you know, marketing thing of we need to, you know, use this as a launching pad for a show. Putting that aside, the reason why I guess they felt like this was season finale material is they have guest star Rita Moreno playing this woman who, you know, the basic premise of the episode is she is married to a doctor who is so important that she can't talk to him about the fact that she hates her life and feels completely useless and listless and depressed.
So that is one of the versions of this Rita Moreno character that we saw, because there's also the version that is sad because all of her kids are now away at college or grown, and she is experiencing empty nest syndrome, and her husband just isn't really noticing because he's busy with work. That's what I thought the episode was going to be. And then it turned into, well, I want to tell him about it because he should know because he's my husband and I love him. But then when she goes to tell him, it's a completely different character of the wife. And she's like, our marriage is in trouble because you're never here. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm working the same that I always have been working. And she's like, yeah, but I used to have kids here and now I don't. Now I'm lonely. And he's like, hold on, I got to take a call because Mr. So-and-so finally peed again. Mm-hmm. And like, and so she like pieces out and like leaves.
Yeah. So hang on. So just to back up a second, what we're talking about is Rita Moreno is the friend of the Golden Girls.
She's their next door neighbor, right. And her doctor, Paul, played by Paul Dooley.
Not who, her doctor, her husband.
Her husband, who is a doctor, the doctor, their neighbor. So there's Rita Moreno's character, the wife.
Yes.
Who is neighbors of the Golden Girls.
Right. So we meet her by her showing up to the normal Golden Girls set and explaining these problems to her. So in that, so far, we're still in normal TV episode land. We're still with characters we know and love.
Right. And so Rita Moreno explains her troubles that sound very much like empty nest syndrome and nothing more. Not that her marriage is in trouble or any of that. She was just nervous. She had sort of that like nervous energy.
She felt like she couldn't talk to her husband about it. She would say things like,
She didn't want to make it seem like the work he was doing wasn't important. And by the way, two of the Golden Girls, he's their doctor. So they're like, definitely don't tell him to cut back on his hours. It's already hard enough to get an appointment with him.
It's like she was the wife of Dr. Anthony Fauci. It was like the world depends on this guy
having
100% access to his work at all times. Yeah.
And his patients were calling him at home. Like his phone was ringing off the hook with patients that were just calling his personal home number to let him know that they'd peed or that they had, like, whatever ailment they had last seen him for was now moving in the right direction.
Yeah. So it's your standard sort of workaholic situation.
Right.
And then when you meet him, yeah, he's the most self-absorbed, least empathetic character in the world. Right?
And I saw him as kind of affable, but just not realizing that there was anything because his life hadn't changed, right? He would go to work every day. He would come home, you know, come home whenever he wanted every day. The only thing that has changed in his life is that his kids are now not in his house for him to kiss them goodnight when he comes home. But yeah. For the wife, her whole world is different. She has no one around and no one to talk to and no activities because her entire social calendar for the last 18 to 20 some years, because they apparently had three kids, is that's what they were saying, that had been raising children. And so,
yes, it's less of an issue for him. But I guess what I'm responding to is the way he reacts to her when she tells him this. I just kind of got this vibe like he just didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, like he says things like he goes, well, all right, what if we took a second honeymoon? Would that work? And she's like, we never took any honeymoon. I was spent our wedding night in the frickin' emergency room waiting area.
Yeah, no, in a bed next to a coma patient.
Yeah. So you just get the impression that his wife is telling him, like, we have no, you know, like, relationship anymore. I'm not connecting with you. And he's was just like, oblivious.
Well, and I mean, to his credit, he was like, this has never been a, what are you talking about? Like, nothing has changed. Like, this has never been a problem. And she's like, yes, things have changed. I don't have kids here anymore. I'm alone all the time. Like, don't you understand that? And he was like, no, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Go and why don't you get a job? Why don't you go do something? Why don't you go make yourself busy?
Yeah.
This is a very normal occurrence just in our parents' generation.
A pragmatic kind of response.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. So to review here, at this point, now we're talking about this husband and wife character who are one step removed from the Golden Girls, it's the show that we're supposed to be watching.
Right.
So in these scenes where we're, you know, dealing with them and their issues in their house, we meet this whole new wacky cast of characters.
Correct.
And this is what I mean by that feeling where your friend invites you to drinks and then bails
and
you're stuck with a bunch of weirdos.
Because we didn't have much of the Golden Girls in this episode. They did kind of pop in, like, you know, Rita Moreno came over to their house at the beginning and then they came over to her house a couple of times at the end.
Yeah.
Or once in the middle and once at the end. But for the most part, we didn't see them. But at the very beginning, we get the Golden Girls classic scene in the kitchen and the dishes are piling up because Mr. Fix-It didn't finish fixing their dishwasher. And they're like, when is Mr. Fix-It going to come back? So now fast forward, we're in the empty nests set. We're in the neighbor's house. And the wacky cast of characters is being introduced by coming to the door and just walking in as, you know, neighbors are wont to do. And so this guy shows up and I think they called him like Charlie or something. And he's like, hey, how do you know I'm Chuck right now? Like, how can you tell the difference between my three personalities? And he's like, well, you know, the other two personalities are afraid of something and you knocked on the door or whatever. Yeah. So I knew it was you.
Yeah. So this guy, his shtick is he is a mental patient with dissociative
three distinct personalities, multiple personality disorder.
Yeah. And so that's the joke.
The
premise, I guess, is just that you're going to constantly deal with all the funny misadventures of a guy who is actually three different people.
Right. And then they make a point to be like, see, there's nothing wrong with mental illness. Like, isn't it great? He's a perfectly lovable guy. You just got to, you know, figure out who you're talking to. Like, that was their comment on mental health. But so then he comes out. Now we've got him in the scene. He goes upstairs. The Golden Girls come over, or one or two of the Golden Girls come over. for, I don't know, a cup of sugar or something. No reason. To check in on the wife, right? To be like, hey, did you tell him? Right. And she's like, no, I haven't had a chance yet. And they're like, oh, Chuck, you know, Chuck's upstairs or whatever. And they're like, oh, good. Well, see if you can get him to be Mr. Fix-It, because I need Mr. Fix-It to come over and fix the dishwasher. And then from upstairs, we hear him say, as he's coming down, the character of Chuck is like, so I fixed your ceiling fan and I did this and I noticed that this needed that. So I just rerouted the this and I blah, 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 and tells all these things that he fixed. And they were like, well, okay, great. And then the Golden Girls are like, cool. So when you see Mr. Fix-It, will you tell him? But he's just said all these things. So like the audience totally knows. How do they not know? And he's like, I am Mr. Fix-It now. I'll be right over.
Yeah. It's such a strange idea for a character.
Yeah. Very weird.
And
very
then strange. Addition to him, you have just this generic, creepy, horned up other funny, funny neighbor character.
Played by David Leisure, and he is the only character that survives this attempt at a backdoor pilot to the original pilot.
Which is amazing because he is odious.
Yeah.
He is disgusting. Like, I didn't write down any quotes or anything.
Yeah, no.
So I wish I had like a specific example, but he's just detestable in everything he says and does.
Yeah. That is his entire character.
Yeah. And I guess that's part of the formula in the 80s is like you just have someone who's this, freaking
yeah, gross. This horrible guy that everybody like the sole reason for him to be in a scene is so that Dorothy can get off a good one-liner about how horrible he is.
Yeah.
And like apparently he threw up in their pool at a New Year's Eve party and that's why he's not allowed to come over to their house anymore. BTW, the Golden Girls do not have a pool.
Interesting.
So at this point, I need to tell you some trivia.
Sure.
Okay. Right? Rita Moreno, not only is this the lowest rated fan episode like ever of the Golden Girls. And it was such a massive failure that, like we said, they retooled the entire idea for what the TV show Empty Nest would be.
See, hang on. Let's just pause on that for a second, because is that not the complete wrong takeaway from that? The reason why people didn't like it was because, like you said, we're tuning in to see an episode about a group of characters that we know. You're taking us to a completely different set and a completely different cast and point of view and showing us a bunch of characters who happen to be obnoxious and borderline offensive. You know, we want to be watching Sophia and Blanche and we're watching freaking Norman Bates. Like,
okay, so Rita Moreno has given many interviews about this, and she said that Susan Harris, the creator and writer of Golden Girls, also the creator and writer of the subsequent sitcom Empty Nest, was ill and not available for rewrites when they were shooting this episode. So the reason that there are it's seemingly three different wives that Rita Moreno is playing in this episode is because every one of the writers was sort of scrambling around, but not really wanting to make a different, like not really wanting to make. And the Golden Girls themselves were like, this is crap. This is a horrible season finale. They were unhappy. So the whole shooting process, Rita Moreno says that it was really tense. Susan Harris wasn't there. Couldn't do rewrites. The episode needed to be fixed. And then you gotta think, right? This Susan Harris woman, she's got a hit. So now she has a deal with this network to make whatever spinoff she wants to make. And she wasn't available to actually make this backdoor pilot fly. So they still use the same set in the actual
horrible set, horrible lavender set
with clear plexiglass cupboards so you could see through them and all your dishes out into the backyard, which was like a lanai, you know, Florida
really didn't
greenery. But yeah, I don't mind the mauve, but I grew up in Florida. So we'll, you know, agree to disagree. I kind of like that look. The plexiglass cabinets notwithstanding, covers notwithstanding. But so yeah, so it was a complete failure on many, many levels. But the Susan Harris woman, the creator of Golden Girls, still had this deal. So she was going to deliver. And when they retooled it, they killed off the wife. The husband was recast. This child that in the episode of the Golden Girls that comes back and wants to drop out of Columbia University. And that's Rita Moreno's reason for leaving and going and getting her daughter back into college and getting her resettled in. But then she stays up there for multiple weeks and leaves her husband to feel some of the loneliness that she's been feeling, which we then find out later that it wasn't because she had a bunch going on, which is what we hear that she's been saying, that she had a bunch going on and there was a talent agent and maybe she had been an actress before the, you know, his practice took off. So maybe she was going to get back into acting or whatever. All of that's a big fat lie. She's just been hanging out in this fancy hotel in New York City, waiting
for him, a taste of his own
medicine. Waiting for him to show up, which is horrible. Like, no one, ew, another, like, it, gross. That's,
She's pouting and
And so then he comes and they have, you know, their actual only honeymoon because they never had a first honeymoon and enjoy themselves, you know, that for a week in New York and whatever. But so in the actual Empty Nest, they kill off her.
Yeah.
The wife is dead. It's a different husband.
And we say,
they don't have that same daughter. There's no Jenny in Empty Nest.
Yeah.
They have three daughters. Two of which appear on the show Empty Nest, and one of which is an off-screen character named Emily that never appears.
They did not, no offense to Tom Dooley, who is a great actor. He's in The Mighty Wind, the Christopher Guest movies.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Dooley. They did not feel the need to have the husband be handsome in this iteration of this backdoor pilot.
Come on.
It's a TV show. Why not have
the guy? No, but this is always the way it is.
He's supposed to be
King of Queens. It's every, like, hot woman, fat guy. I didn't think
that was the vibe that they're going for.
Oh,
though.
I totally. Like, it doesn't matter, right? All these, like, this guy's well off or whatever. This guy's funny. This guy had appeared on an episode of Golden Girls before and did a good job. And so now he's going to be something else. It's always a hot, because you can't be an actress and be normal looking. You have to be hot.
So despite this being just completely unsuccessful by any possible metric, they make Empty Nest the series.
They do.
Okay, so that was the Empty Nests episode from the Backdoor Pilots podcast. Now we're going to move on to the Cold War stuff, but first we have to continue our quiz. Okay, a woman's perfect outfit must include a cardigan, shoulder pads, a belt, or fancy lingerie.
A woman's perfect outfit. Oh, man. A perfect outfit includes a belt, I think.
Okay. Well, I am definitely on record as being anti-shoulder pads.
I thought you were going to say shoulder pads.
No, I am not in favor. I love cardigans. I don't think of it as a gendered thing. I like them, man, woman, and child.
He is currently wearing a Mr. Rogers cardigan.
Yeah. So my answer is cardigan.
What is your dream vacation spot? The Italian countryside, anything outdoors, London or Paris?
This is a tough one. I famously don't really like to go on vacation at all.
Yeah, that is very true.
I mean, I guess I kind of like London. I'll say London.
Okay. And I will go with, I think I'm going to go with the Italian countryside.
Which 2016 GOP presidential candidate do you prefer?
Wow.
Rick Perry, Carly Fiorina, Donald Trump, and Dr. Ben Carson, who I only still even know who he is because of the SNL portrayal of him.
This is terrible.
Yeah, this is an unanswerable question.
None of the above. Yeah. I don't remember Carly Fiorina. Do you remember her?
Not really.
No, me either. Unanswerable.
Yeah, you could put Ben Carson for me. All right. I'll live with that.
Yeah, put Rick Perry for me, even though that is not true.
All right. Yeah, we're back on more solid ground here. What is your favorite Star Wars character? Yoda, Darth Vader, R2-D2, or Princess Leia?
Oh.
And it's funny how I'm trying to figure out the mentality behind this. Like, I guess the people who answer Darth Vader are more of a B. Arthur.
Are more of a
whereas
Dorothy.
The people who answer R2-D2 are more of like a Rose.
Yep. Yoda's got to be Sophia. Yeah.
But we
so
shouldn't
Princess
try to game
Leia.
The system.
No. I know. I'm just like, oh, that's interesting, though. It was funny that we could pick it out, even though we didn't think. So I guess I'm going to go with Leia.
Okay. I'm definitely R2 all the way. Okay, so the next time we covered the Golden Girls was for our Cold War episode. This was where we watched Head of the Class take the kids to Moscow, and we saw Mr. Ed be a undercover spy and all that. And yeah, in this episode, this was all about Rose sending her letter to Mr. Gorbachev. So the following segment is from our Cold War podcast.
You would see the biggest gift would be from me.
But yeah, that's Mr. Ed for you. So let's move on to the Golden Girls.
Golden Girls, we're looking at season 3, episode 6, Letter to Mr. Gorbachev.
Yeah. So I miss the days when you could establish a character's interest by just opening on a shot of them holding a hardcover book with both hands. And it's just like, okay, I guess that's what they're into. Because this episode starts with Sophia just sitting at the breakfast table with a book that says, like, in giant letters, how to do magic or something.
Magic for dummies or something. It wasn't even for dummies. It was like magic for like newborns or something.
So this episode of the Golden Girls, that's going to be a B story, that Sophia is getting ready for a talent show, and she's trying out all different things. She wants to be a magician, then a puppeteer, then a, you know, a singer or whatever. The main story of this is going to be that Rose, Betty White, you know, who her whole role in the show is to be the sort of naive, childlike person. She walks into the living room or the kitchen or whatever and says to the other characters, like, what's the deal with the Cold War? Basically, what's the deal? Like, I'm really
Rose
sad.
Rose Nyland has turned into Jerry Seinfeld, in case you were wondering. So Blanche and Dorothy are sitting on the couch, and Rose comes home in her Sunshine Girls outfit. She's like the leader of a Sunshine Girls troupe, and she looks really down. And they say, Rose, what's wrong? And she said, I'm worried about nuclear war, and then walks into the other room. And so, of course, they follow her and they're like, what's going on? And they have one of their fun little kitchen table conversations where Rose says something that is ridiculously inane, but also begs the question, tell me more. And the Golden Girls all, you know, have that whole thing of like, oh God, are you going to ask what's more? I don't want to ask. I'm only asking because I need to finish my coffee. I'm only asking because I need to finish my cheesecake. And so they say, what do you mean, Rose? And then she tells a ridiculous story from St. Olaf. And in this time, she is showing the drawings that her Sunshine Girl troop kids made. And 3 out of the 8 of the girls drew bombs going off, and like, this is what it looks like the day after the nuclear war.
Yeah.
And she's all torn up that her kids, these kids are thinking about this, and they're 8, 9 years old.
Yeah, which is interesting based on, you know, the context we were talking about earlier. This is the Gorbachev era. Disarmament is sort of happening. I mean, to an extent, it still hasn't happened. We still have nuclear weapons pointed at each other.
But it was being discussed, and it was on its way to going down. And this is 1987.
Yeah.
So this is after the tear down the wall, Mr. Gorbachev, Reagan's speech, but before that actually happened. So we've got like 2 years here, or, you know, 2.5 years of these sort of ongoing negotiations between the U.S. and the former Soviet Union and the West and the former Soviet Union about disarmament.
Yeah, and this was also the subject of Superman 4, Quest for Peace, that came out in 1987. And that was all about how, like, we need Superman to wag the finger at, like, all of the leaders of the world and take all of our nuclear weapons and throw them into outer space, because, like, we're not going to be the ones to do it.
And as we come to find out when we meet those campers, the Sunshine Scout girls, later on in the episode, they're a bunch of psychos.
Yes. I love, though, the main girl. There's a little smarmy girl that always, you know, she'll play into the story later, but she always has a little quip And she really won me over. I thought that girl was
Oh my god. Maybe it's just because I'm a teacher. I was like, somebody needs to tell that brat to shut up.
But yeah, Rose says, I wrote down a direct quote, I'm taking my troop camping in 2 weeks. I don't want this nuclear war business to spoil our fun. Right. So she's going to send a letter to Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan, asking them both to disarm, to put away their nuclear weapons.
Yeah. She said, you know, a well-worded letter will make a difference. I think it will make a difference. And of course, Blanche and Dorothy are just kind of laughing at her, you know.
So Rose is taking her Girl Scout troop, or the off-brand Sunshine Girl troop, out for a trip. And it pales in comparison to what happens in Mr. Ed, but we get a little bit of questionable racial stuff here because she comes back in the house and goes, oh, I didn't know it was a full moon. I forgot my, she doesn't say Native American headdress, but that's what it is. And she grabs that and does one of those like whooping war cry type things and like trots out of the house. So yeah, a lot of sketchy stuff racially on this one.
So this episode, though, they make an attempt to try to say, just a few things about how the people who live in Russia and the people who live in the United States aren't all that different. And we're going to see this go that next step further in Head of the Class. But that is something that this episode tries to get across, that the leaders are actually behind the times. And the fact that the leaders of these two superpowers can't get it together to start disarming, even though the kids understand and the people who live in each country understand that that needs to start happening. So they get Rose leaves with her questionable headdress. Rose leaves with her inappropriate headdress. And then there's an immediate knock at the door. And there's a guy there who is another Boris type character. So he shows up and he says, hey, are you Rose and Island or can't, you know, asks if Rose is there. No, Rose isn't there. Well, here's a letter from Premier Gorbachev, and we would like her to come to Russia, to come to Moscow and meet him. And he was really touched by her letter, and we're going to have a press conference in a couple of days, so let her know.
Yeah, so this was a pretty clever premise, I think, because the characters are all amazed and confused, like what she wrote this dopey letter to Gorbachev and somehow he's like inviting her to the country, which granted, there are many layers of ridiculousness to this, many of which the show does not address. You know, I don't even know how she would know like where to send the letter.
But the same way that kids who write to the presidents do. Yeah, you just the White House, Mr. Reagan, like yeah. They're used to that stuff.
But the letter, I guess, does get to him. And what none of them consider is that Rose's simplistic way of communicating resembles that of a child.
Right. So he leaves and they're getting ready. They're going to have a press conference in a couple days. And then the next scene we get is Rose on the couch. She's come home after the very long, sleepover or the camping trip that was messed up by rain. And she's just having a nap, having a lie down on the couch and dream sequence. She's in Moscow giving her press conference and the snow is coming down and they're all in the furs. And
there's a big banner. There's like three big banners, yes. The way they would have like of world leaders. And it's like Lenin on the left and another famous Russian leader on the right. And then Betty White in the middle one. Yeah, the whole thing is very silly. They did not spring for the location shooting like some of our other stuff did.
No, they did not. So they have this dream sequence and, Dorothy gets mistaken for a former premier of Russia, Brezhnev, and the crowd starts chanting his name when she steps up to the mic as though she looks like him, like that, like what always happens to Dorothy. And so, it's just a fun little gag. And then Sophia comes in and makes a joke about how she wasn't invited and she had to hitch a ride with some German guy who dropped her in Red Square. Well, so then they wake Rose up and she expresses disappointment that she had written the letter to Reagan 4 days earlier than she wrote the letter to Gorbachev. And yet Reagan still hasn't
Yeah, responded. The joke is sort of that she doesn't realize how amazing it is that she got a response back from Gorbachev. When they tell her, like, you're never going to believe this, Gorbachev wrote back and he wants to see you, she's like, okay, but what about Reagan? But anyway, there's, I guess prior to this trip that's going to happen, they have to do a press conference at their house, conveniently enough, right? Because everything in a sitcom happens at the house. So the same Russian diplomat comes with a bunch of press people. They set up a little makeshift press conference in their living room. But that's when everything comes out in the open, because the diplomat sees their Girl Scout troop and is like, which one of them is Rose?
Right. Well, even before that, right there, he is speaking with Rose and Dorothy. I'm sorry. He's speaking with Dorothy and Blanche. And he says, you know, is Rose here? And they said, no, she's gone out to get her her Sunshine Girls troop. And he goes, oh, great. She'll have some girls her age here. And they said, what? And he was like, how old is she? Is she 9 or is she 10? And they were like, she's closer to 10. And then they go into the kitchen, and then Rose comes in with the girls from the troop, and they're all standing there, and they are able, Dorothy and Blanche are able to tell Rose this confusion before the man walks in. And then the man walks in and Blanche grabs that salty little girl that you had mentioned before and was like, here she is, and kind of thrust her forward as though she's going to go out and do the press conference.
Yeah. And you feel for them in this situation. It's ridiculous that they find themselves here, but the embarrassment of like, oh God, what do we do? It's this sort of no-win scenario. And so they decide at first, all right, I guess we'll just give them what they want, send one of the little girls out, have her read the letter, and, you know, save face. And of course, the girl's like, oh, so this is okay, even though you said scouts never lie? Okay, good to know, and goes out to do it. And so Rose doesn't have the heart. She comes out and basically says, sorry, everybody, I'm the simpleton that wrote that letter. It's me, you know, 68-year-old Rose Nylon, not a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah, and, you know, she doesn't say all of that, right? She just is like, oh, yeah, I'm the one that wrote the letter. And then the Russian diplomat guy is like, oh, press conference over. And if you need me, I'm Miami's newest resident. My name is Dave, and like runs out the door, indicating that he's going to be in big trouble with the higher ups for making this error.
But yeah, so the episode kind of ends with them all sitting around and they're like, well, Rose, let us read your letter, you know, because she's mortified, understandably. But they're like, come on, let us read it. And so it's this sort of weird tone where they read the letter aloud, and I think we're supposed to take it as like, yes, it may be a little childlike, but it's the truth. And this is sort of our stance as the Golden Girls TV show. And it basically is like, Mr. Gorbachev, please get rid of the I wrote it down verbatim. Unplug the bombs, she says, right? Yes. She wants them to get rid of the nuclear weapons. It's not nice to be pointing potentially existentially destructive weapons at each other. And, you know, we're supposed to kind of come away from it going like, you know, she's right.
Well, and so there's also a line in the letter that would lead to the confusion about her age, because she says, I'm writing to tell you, I'm really worried about the nuclear war, and I've heard that there are enough bombs to blow up the world 100 times, and it scares me. It scares the girls in my cadet troop, right, too. So it makes it sound like those are her friends.
Like my fellow Girl Scouts, exactly, as opposed to the children in my care.
Golden Girls will never leave you on that kind of a moment, right? Unless it has something to do with female empowerment. Because what they're really going to leave you on is phone rings. Rose goes to pick up the phone, and it is President Reagan. And she's like, oh my gosh, Reagan read my letter. He said, thank you. You know, he was happy that I wrote it, and he, you know, whatever. And she's like, oh, I feel so much better, because she'd been very down. She's like, oh, I feel so much better. And she goes bustling out of the kitchen, and then in walks Sophia, and she says, I know what talent I'm going to use at the talent show. She points to the phone and she says, my Ronald Reagan impression.
There you go. Okay, that was the Letter to Mr. Gorbachev segment from the Cold War Sitcoms podcast. Now, before we move on to the final little section here, let's continue our Golden Girls quiz. Let's answer a few more questions. What's your... This is another one that is a hard pass.
What's your favorite CNN program?
God, let me... From all my hours of watching CNN programming.
Yeah, right? Anthony Bourdain, Parts Unknown, The Wonder List with Bill Weir, Somebody's Gotta Do It with Mike Rao, and Vital Signs with Dr. Sanjay Gupta.
Well, listen, not to brag, right? Not to drop the panties all over the country here, but I did work for the Dr. Sanjay Gupta CNN specials. I don't know if it was this Vital Signs thing in particular, but I did a little...
You've done animations of the blood cells moving through the heart and whatnot.
Years ago, yeah. So you can put Vital Signs for me.
Well, that's interesting. So I was going to say Vital Signs too, but that's just because I like Dr. Sanjay Gupta's stuff.
Mm. Well, we can both answer that.
Yeah.
All right. So we're both choosing Sanjay. All right. What's your favorite classic movie? Casablanca, The Godfather, Babe... I don't know about that.
How is that?
Place.
How is Babe on the same list?
I know.
Well, as these, does that mean Babe the Pig? That movie?
That was an Oscar movie. No, that was nominated for Oscar. Maybe,
yeah, but the other ones are all like way earlier. Like,
well, that's the
Place,
thing.
Casablanca
is
Godfather.
A generation prior to The Godfather, so yeah. I think it's just movies from different time periods.
I guess.
And again, the way it maps onto the different characters is pretty obvious when you think about it.
Oh, I guess that's true. That makes sense. Well, anyway, I'm going with Peyton Place on this one.
I guess I'll just be honest and say Godfather. What? Here's that term we love so much, and we know that Golden Girls has a great track record with the Native American culture. What is your spirit animal?
Jay says with a glint in his eye. I don't know. These questions are ridiculous. I'm from Florida. Flamingo?
Yeah, the choices are flamingo, turtle, deer, or lion. I'll say deer. I like deer. Okay, I think we are going to have our results shortly. But first, we're going to listen to a segment from our Fear of Public Speaking podcasts. This was where we talked about Big Bang Theory and Sheldon's fear of public speaking.
Yes. Mayim Bialik was afraid. Blossom was afraid
this
to speak
where,
in public. Yep.
Yep, we had Blossom joining the debate club and all of that. And so, yeah, this segment is going to be all about Rose conquering her fear of public speaking.
And a few other fears thrown in there for a good measure.
Yeah.
This is also the only episode of Golden Girls that we covered that was like a normal Golden Girls episode.
Yeah, so here it is.
You would see the biggest gift would be from me and the card attached.
So let's get into the Golden Girls properly. This is season 3, episode 5, Nothing to Fear But Fear Itself. So, Golden Girls is pretty familiar ground at this point. We've covered it twice, although one of it was the bullshit empty nest backdoor pilot that
right,
they were hardly in.
Right, which was really not them at all, yep.
Yeah, but I do see a pattern already established, which is we often begin with Sophia having some sort of project, right? I remember the last time it began with Sophia looking at her big book of like, so you want to be a magician? And she was like getting ready for the talent show.
She was trying to come up with a talent. So throughout the episode, she kept doing different
talents.
Exactly.
She's always preparing for some sort of thing. They're always
the senior center that she doesn't want to go live
at. Yeah, they're always kind of shoving her off to a B or C story. And so it's like she gets her own little comic strip scene. And in this case, it's she's entering a cooking contest.
Right.
Right. So Dorothy says something like, you finally perfected your non-rolling meatball, right?
Yes,
like
she's, but it wasn't. It was lasagna.
Yeah, she's working on lasagna. I don't know. I just kind of noticed that in both of the episodes we've seen, Sophia is pretty ineffectual in the story. So they always kind of bookend it with a little project she has.
She is there for the little funny moments to kind of weave in and out. So if we happen to have a really serious section, then Sophia can come in with her next attempt at, you know, veal parmesan or something, and we can have some funny little digs coming from her.
Yeah, exactly. But the main story is going to be Rose. She's upset. She comes in crying because her aunt died, but she hated her aunt. The problem is that it's her tradition in her family that the oldest niece has to eulogize somebody when they die.
That makes so much sense.
And so she has to speak at the funeral.
Right. This aunt that she has that lives in Fort Lauderdale, mm-hmm. but is going to be buried in Bermuda where she loved to vacation.
So this, again, matches our Cold War Golden Girls episode. That was also a Rose-centric episode that is sort of, you know, catalyzed by her walking in all upset and sort of announcing something.
By the way, another episode where she was going to have to go give a speech in front of many, 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 many people. Yeah. And it's the next episode that after this episode. And she was not scared at all. Her fear was beaten in one episode.
Well, and how do you suppose they got to Russia?
They on a plane.
Right, which we'll
again,
also address.
Dorothy, a fear of flying. We got a little bonus one in this episode.
Yes, tons of overlapping tropes here. But yeah, it all begins with Rose being upset. Dorothy's suggestion, which I noted because this is a definite subtrope that is going to recur, imagine everybody naked, right?
That's the thing to do. That's what that is common wisdom.
Now, as we established, you're not the personality type that has to overcome stage fright to begin with. But is this real? Does anybody do this? Does anybody find any solace when they're nervous for something to imagine that people are naked?
I can't understand how that would work, right? If you are nervous about presenting or being in front of people, you are very likely like in your own mind, right? So I think the idea is that it's trying to get that inner monologue to be something silly instead of something fearful. And then that should help, right? Like, I kind of understand that. Like, I'm terrified of auditioning. I hate auditioning. I shake. I'm nervous. It's the worst. I hate it. And so I think, you know, that kind of inner monologue of, oh, maybe I can like picture them naked, maybe that, but that, the amount of brain energy, and that doesn't even work. And that, how is it laughing? And it's like, do you do it before you start talking? I don't understand it.
Yeah, I've always heard that as one of those things, like, I don't know if you would call it an urban legend, but something that's like, seems to be a thing in movies
Sage
and TV.
Sage wisdom.
So that advice gets thrown out there and they sort of turn it around on her because Blanche and Rose just start, I guess, imagining Dorothy naked right then and there. And they start laughing.
They start like, laughing at her. And then Dorothy gets all grouchy as she walks out of the room. And then they're laughing even harder because, you know, they are imagining her butt and everybody. It's hilarious.
Yeah. So we get, like we alluded to, the first of many origin stories, right? This is a big overlapping subtrope of all of these fear of public speaking things, as there was some traumatic childhood event. In this case, it was Rose's high school graduation in her, what is it, Olaf? Is that what she calls
Mount Olaf? Mm-hmm.
Mount Olaf. So in her homeland, they choose the valedictorian by drawing straws. There was only like 19 people in her graduating class. And
the top four get to draw straws.
Yeah. And it wasn't, you know, for a Rose story, it wasn't that outlandish, right? She choked. She was permanently traumatized. That's the deal.
That's the deal. And so ever since then, she has not wanted to speak in public. And now she can't bear it. She's just not going to go to the funeral.
Right. But so this is where, like you said, we get our fun bonus overlapping tropes. Each of the Golden Girls, except Sophia, I guess, have their own personal phobia. So Dorothy's next suggestion after the naked thing is, she says, try therapy. That's what I did to get over my fear of flying.
That's right.
And then Blanche chimes in and says, oh, and I have this recurring dream. She says, I'm trapped in an enclosed space. And she used this phrase more than once. And I just have to pause on this for a second. Because if you have a dream, who would use the phrase enclosed space when describing their own dream? Like, wouldn't it be more specific? Wouldn't you say, I was trapped in an elevator? I was trapped in a closet. It just reeks to me of one of those things of the sitcom writers jotting it down and then like breaking for lunch and going, we'll fill in something more specific later, and then just never bothering to do it.
See, I thought they were teeing up the reveal that happens on the plane, which is what I didn't tell you was that the enclosed space was a plane and that the plane crashed.
Oh, okay, fair enough. But what she does say is that she's trapped in the enclosed space with men who are all bald, right? Which, as a bald man, I obviously take issue with this. And I don't even get it. Like, is it just supposed to be peculiar? Or is the idea that she's so horny, but she's surrounded by bald men and she doesn't want to sleep with them?
She doesn't have any prospects in
so
this space.
It's like
she
water,
trapped.
Water everywhere, but not a drop to drink.
There you
kind
go.
Of thing.
Exactly.
I find that surprising. And again, maybe I'm just taking it too personally, but I feel like for all of the sort of retirement age suitors that she's had over the years,
always have hair or, you know, butt hair.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, I would have to imagine you threw in a Telly Savalas type here and there, you know?
Who knows?
But yeah, so she's haunted by a recurring dream of bald men, and she says that she eventually got over it by, like, denying it, basically. Like, she just had this sort of mind over matter approach. So she doesn't really have much of a suggestion, but the point is that, you know, Rose is going to conquer her fears at this funeral, and the other two girls are going along to support her, and they each have their own phobia that they claim to have vanquished.
That's right, until we get on the plane.
Yeah.
Well, and also Dorothy tries to lie her way out, because so she says she's all good, but then Sophia, again, we get one of these fun little moments. Sophia comes in and is like, well, you know, planes to Bahamas are not big jet airliners like that one you took to Arizona. They're tiny and rickety, and there's always storms that you can't predict in the Atlantic. And so you never know. That's going to be a tiny little rickety plane. And Dorothy's like, don't make me go, Mom.
Yeah, exactly. Dorothy basically decides, like, she freaks out. And she's
got to find
like,
a way to get out of
it. I'm not going to go. I also just wanted to mention, there's a fun little scene between Dorothy and Blanche when Rose is off. She's gone to sleep or something. And they're talking about, I would hate to have to give a eulogy. And they start talking about, what would you say if I died first and you had to eulogize me and vice versa?
And Blanche's shoulder pads in this scene are so big that you can see inside the collar of her shirt, because her shirt is standing up off of her chest and shoulders so much from the shoulder pads. That was really what I was paying attention to during this scene. But yeah, it's a fun little moment for them to do what they do around the kitchen table, which is say something nice and then get in some zingers.
Yeah, exactly. Dorothy more or less plays it straight. And she says, I would say that she was the best friend I ever had. You know, Blanche pushes her for like, what about my looks? What about my looks? Whatever. But then when Blanche does it, it's all of these great passive aggressive digs. She goes, right. I would say I always felt safe when she was in the house, you know, like,
yeah, because she's so big and strong.
Yeah, the best thing about Dorothy is she's like a deterrent for burglars.
For crime.
And she says, I looked up to her like she was an older sister.
That's,
you know,
right. So. And then Dorothy is like, oh, Blanche, how nice. Oh, and I forgot to mention, as she's walking out of the room, I would also say in your eulogy that you were fat.
Yeah. So, yeah, it all kind of devolves into insults. So yeah, the next day, Dorothy is trying to weasel out of the flight. She says, I can't go because my mom is sick. She went to the food contest thing, but she has to come back because she ate a bad cannoli. Yeah. But the jig is up. Sophia comes in and she's fine. And, you know, it all kind of comes out in the open that Dorothy's afraid to go. And she's like, you know, they're like, what kind of example are you setting for Rose? And so, yeah, we're all going to conquer our fears. We're all going to take this flight together.
Yes. And so then we go to the plane, and just like in our Fear of Flying episode, we get a lovely, very roomy seats that they're sitting in.
This was a better plane set, I thought, than all the ones that we were sort of analyzing on our Fear of Flying episode. I feel like this one looked more like a plane.
Yeah, but still just like the one little tiny section at the very back of the plane.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, four or five rows, and then the flight attendant is standing in the back. That flight attendant, by the way, that is a character actress that I have seen in a million things.
She, when she's doing her little spiel at the beginning, she says, in the unlikely event of a mishap during our flight.
Right.
I've been on a lot of flights. I've never heard the word mishap.
No, they usually say in the unlikely event of a water landing.
They're more specific, but because they're sort of dumbing down the spiel for TV and they're just making it more, you know, they're making it more likely to cause a freak out, which of course it does.
Right. Well, and then they get all the fun things of like, well, what could a mishap be? Oh, a mishap could be something like this, Dorothy. I know what a mishap is.
Yes, yeah. And then this is around the time that Blanche is taking a look around the plane and noticing that all of the men are bald. And that is a fun moment.
Well, because so a bunch of these guys had like Bermuda hats on, ball caps, and then they, you know, they do kind of a close-up of the women just sort of sitting there and having, you know, a little bit of a freak out. Dorothy's trying to hold on to Blanche and be nervous. And then all when they do a zoom out the next time and the flight attendant starts talking again, Blanche turns around and all of the men have taken their hats off.
Yeah.
So she just sees a sea of bald heads behind her.
Yeah, it is literally her worst nightmare. And so, yeah, they're all just kind of like, all right, we're going to grin and bear it. And we have kind of an act break. It returns to this fun sort of tracking shot where the camera like pans along from one golden girl to the next. And they're all sitting there in silence. And when Rose says something, Dorothy goes, I thought we agreed, no talking. It shakes the plane.
Right, because now they're all petrified because, you know, Rose still doesn't want to go. Dorothy's terrified of flying, and Blanche has now told them all that her dream is coming true and that the next thing that happens is that the plane crashes. They have found a big bolt on the floor, and the flight attendant is like, "Oh, if anybody found a bolt, it belongs on the beverage cart." Yeah, beverage cart. That's right. That's where it belongs. So they're all just like kind of panicking.
This is like the Twilight Zone episode with the gremlin on the wing, but instead of a gremlin on the wing tearing out the nuts and bolts, it's a little old lady in the middle of the aisle.
Like, I need that bolt back. Oh, and then the pilot comes on and announces that they're about to run into a tropical storm, and so they're not going to keep going to the Bahamas. They have to turn around and go back to Miami. Yeah. And Blanche is ecstatic because she's like, this didn't happen in my dream. My dream's been broken. It's not the same thing. We're turning around. We're going to be fine. Girls, it's going to be great.
Yeah. And Dorothy is happy too, but Rose has been denied her catharsis. And this is something I really relate to. Just that feeling when the thing that you were nervous about and you're sort of on that collision course where I'm going to have to confront it, whether I want to or not. And then you get the pass and that weird feeling of like, good, I guess. Like I'm relieved now that I don't have to do the thing. But then you kind of realize it's that cognitive dissonance of knowing like, oh, but if I had forced myself to confront it, then I would be feeling this amazing, unfettered relief instead of this kind of crappy relief of having to back down.
So they point her in the direction of the flight attendant's PA little speaker thing and say, well, give your eulogy now.
Yeah.
And she does.
Yeah. And so she does similar to the thing we're going to see with Herman and some of these other characters. She kind of gets up and like you see her sort of get into her groove. You know, she kind of says a few sentences, people start to chuckle and she starts to feel comfortable. And it's like you sort of see right before your eyes the anxiety and the phobia sort of dissipate.
Yep.
I wanted to say, you know, I mentioned already how skeptical about when you do a trope like this, are you trampling on some of the continuity of the characters? With Rose in particular, do you think that a fear of public speaking is consistent with her character? If she's meant to be the sort of guileless, you know, simpleton is maybe a little harsh, but, you know, she's Daffy. We talked about how it's a variation, a difference, but a variation on her Mary Tyler Moore character, who was an on-air personality herself. Would somebody with this sort of fun, Daffy, you know, personality who doesn't seem particularly anxious in general, is this a little consistent to sort of slap this fear onto her?
You know, I think she's really the only one of the four that it works for, right? Because you've got Blanche, who is very much presentational. You know, she's been presented in a debutante ball. And
yeah, it's not going to be Blanche.
It doesn't fit her personality. You have Dorothy, who is a teacher, so doesn't have a fear of public speaking because that was her whole career. And then you have Sophia, who suffers no fools at any time, anywhere. She's not afraid of anything. So there's the only one that's left. left is
process of elimination.
Yeah, is Rose. And I think it kind of does work. You know, she loves to tell stories, but she tells them to her friends. And it doesn't seem to me that her fear stems from what other people will think of her. It's just her fear is legitimately just stemming from the fact that she froze that one time and she's never not known what to say because she doesn't have that problem in person normally.
Yeah, which is part of why I feel like the whole childhood trauma pop psychology thing is what makes these episodes not the most, like, what makes them less true to life. But yeah, I kind of agree. It's just something that crossed my mind. I thought it was funny when the flight attendant finally takes the intercom thing away from her. She goes, sit down. This isn't the Copacabana. We're going to get lots of timely references throughout these shows. And so, yeah, you know, problem solved. Everybody's confronted their fears. And so the episode wraps up with Sophia's cooking contest story. And again, just like all these things, I love it for the classic sitcom writing of the B or C story takes place entirely off camera.
Right.
This is just going to be a fun little thing that this eccentric character gets to describe.
Yes. So the big competition, her number one rival in the cooking contest is 103 years old, and she drops dead from the anxiety of it. And even though they both were up for first prize, Sophia takes it home all on her own because the other competitor died. And then the little button on the episode is, oh, and her funeral is next Saturday. Rose, guess who I've put in to do her eulogy?
Yeah, they love to end on that little, just like last time with the call from Ronald Reagan. They just like to kind of bring it full circle. So look, tracking the trope, it is right there in plain sight, right? We're going to have heavy overlap. A character walks into the room. Oh no, I have to give a speech. Let me tell you about the time when I was a kid and I messed everything up and I've been petrified of that ever since. And throughout the show, they'll confront it, right?
That's right.
Let's see if the pattern continues with Blossom.
Who are you, Jay?
Well, no, you're telling me.
Oh, right, right. So, who am I, Jay? Right.
So the results are in.
The results are in.
And as you requested, you are Blanche.
I know.
As a deeply sensual person, you like to live life to the fullest. Proof, your lifelong dreams to date everyone in Miami and to meet Mr. Burt Reynolds.
Well, there you go. I mean, I've always wanted to meet Mr. Burt Reynolds, clearly. Hey, Jay, guess who you are?
Am I Dorothy?
You are Sophia. Picture it. 2015. You have gained the wisdom of age, but inside you're really young at heart. However, there's an air of mystery about you. Exactly what is in that purse you never put down?
I think some of that's true. Not necessarily the young at heart part. Okay, so there it is. So those were our three Golden Girls segments so far.
Yeah.
Now, all these many months later, any sort of overall thoughts about the gals who are golden?
The gals who are golden. Look, Golden Girls is wonderful. I am surprised, and I was thinking about this when we were getting ready to do this episode, this mixtape episode, and I was like, you know, it's interesting. There's so many good episodes of the Golden Girls, and we haven't watched them yet. You know, sometimes when we go to pick shows, we pick them because we're like, oh, you know what? There was this really funny episode of Taxi. Let's see if we can find something else that has a trope that's like that. And I think we should do that in the coming months for Golden Girls, because there's some really great episodes that we haven't watched.
Yeah. Well, of course, we've only watched a few. But to me, yeah, it's almost like Golden Girls is the flip where it's like, I think of it as a ringer. It's like when we're pouring through these websites and stuff and going, let's see. And then if we find out the Golden Girls has an episode that fits with that trope, that immediately goes to the top of the list.
Yeah.
It's like everyone likes it.
Everyone likes it. Well, and there was an episode when we did our Things Catch on Fire episode, right? When we did our Fires episode, there's an episode of the Golden Girls, right? Where Sophia's restaurant burns down and it's a really great episode of the Golden Girls, but we had just covered them like two shows prior. So we didn't end up doing it, but it's sitting there in the page waiting for the next time we come back to the fires.
Yeah. Now, I will say I disagree a little bit that the fear of public speaking is the only one that's good or that's like sort of a normal one. I feel like the Cold War one was weird, to be sure, but I think there's a consistency to the Golden Girls, obviously with the huge exception of that backdoor pilot one, which was just a total aberration. But I definitely think of it as an 80s sitcom that takes place in a beige living room and a kitchen. And it's like you always know what you're getting. And sure, there are a few that I'm sure are like really good and they're the famous episodes. And we should try to get to those.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that all of the episodes that we've watched are from right around this same time frame. It's the very last episode of season two, and then episode 5 and 6 of season 3. So they're right there together.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I know we mentioned when we did the fear of public speaking episode, how funny it was that, you know, they conquered their fear of flying. And then in the very next episode, they go to Moscow.
Yeah. Well, do they actually go? They just go in their dream to Moscow.
Oh, that's right. They do just go in their dream.
Yeah. It's funny that both of those two, the Cold War one and the Fear of Public Speaking one, are both Rose episodes.
Yes.
And maybe that's why they're not the best. Nothing against Betty White, but that just means that those stories are both going to be about her silliness or whatever.
And she doesn't get to she gets to have the funny story, but, you know, she always has that funny story. And when it's the side note in an episode, it really hits, I think, better and harder than it does. Although I will say the Nothing to Fear But Fear Itself episode, her story at the beginning there is just, it's a dinger. I mean, like the whole cast is sitting around the table trying not to laugh because Betty White is just doing her thing. I think there's a lot of improv going on there. They let the camera roll. They have a good time and they give each other digs and they roll their eyes. And I think it's really fun. Those are some of the best parts of Golden Girls. When Rose brings up St. Olaf.
Yeah.
Because in the episode, we referred to it as Mount Olive or something like that. I don't know what we were thinking on that day, but like you were like Mount something. And I was like, yeah, Mount Olive.
Yeah, no, to me, that is as
St. Olaf.
I love the Golden Girls, but I didn't watch it growing up. To me, that was not a huge faux pas.
We got emails.
But yeah, look, and one thing you can definitely say for Golden Girls is it's an exception to what I said last time in our season finales episode. It's not a straight white male point of view.
Right.
And so, you know, it's the same way that, you know, you put on MASH and you were like, yeah, this got to be the one show that was a comedy about dead bodies being loaded into helicopters and stuff. Golden Girls got to be the one show that was about these little old ladies.
Like retirees.
And it really is like kind of groundbreaking in the way of just like, in their own sitcom-y way, it is very much about them dealing with their senescence, their sort of fading sexuality, their sort of like, what does it mean to be a woman in your 60s or 70s or 80s?
Or, and by the way, like 55, they are not that much older than we are now.
Well,
at the
famously,
beginning of that
Estelle
series.
Getty was like the youngest one and she made herself look older and all that stuff. Yeah, and it was on for a long time, so obviously they age within the show. But it really, I could just imagine if you were somebody who, is the age that we are now or a little bit older, this was not something that you got to see, to have this whole fun sitcom episode built around a woman in her 60s struggling with, you know, oh, I feel awkward about dating or, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so, it's pretty amazing from that point of view.
It's Sex in the City, but in the retirement home.
Yeah, exactly. And sure, like, I feel like nowadays it's like, oh, yeah, well, there's a million TV shows and stuff. So sure, you know, you get the like that book club movie and the 80 for Brady and all that
stuff. Right, Hot in Cleveland.
Right, exactly. But at this time, you know, there's like what, 3 channels, each one has 6 or 7 primetime shows
True.
Like it really is something. And it's not like the 3 old ladies and, you know,
the young hot mechanic or whatever.
Exactly. It's all them, and they're all like weird in their own way. None of them is like the normal one.
Yeah.
You know. So, all right. So much for the Golden Girls mixtape, and we'll be back with new stuff in a few weeks. And until then, we will consider this segment of the sitcom study concluded. Thank you for listening to The Sitcom Study. Tell us what you think or share your own TV tropes and topic ideas by sending a self-addressed stamped email to sitcomstudypodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram. And if you like the show, consider leaving a rating or review on your podcast app. It helps us boost those precious Nielsen ratings. The Sitcom Study is recorded in front of a live studio dog.